Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. Take control of your family's future with an estate plan from LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout for special savings. Hello, welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 315, recorded on Tuesday, April 25th, 2017, where your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
How you doing, Ron Richards?
I'm doing well. It's a rainy day here in New York City. I don't know if you can hear the rain pounding against the window, but I'm happy to be inside. Excited to talk about Android with one of my favorite people, actually, one of our guests this week.
Yes, and I'm super excited because I feel like the last couple of times this guest, whose name I've not said yet, has come on, I feel like I've been traveling or something, so I always miss Phil. So we made it happen. Phil Nickenson, this time of ModernDad.com, Modern Dad fame.
I'm just glad Ron used me as the answer. I was totally waiting for him to say you. So thank you, Ron.
Oh, Phil, you hold a special place in my heart. You know, this is we're the few, the proud, the grumpy, the tell it like it is.
That's right.
So it's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you. And I am here in my new incarnation as Modern Dad.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about Modern Dad. Obviously, when you've been on the show in the past, it's been more from your position with Android Central, which, of course, you know, now Florence, who's on every week, except for this week, of course, is with Android Central. So we've filled our Android Central quota. However, tell us a little bit about Modern Dad, your latest project.
Yeah, I kicked off this little video venture, and it's 90% video, and I'm still writing on Android Central a little bit whenever I want to because they forgot to take my keys away.
Excellent.
But it's been a lot of fun, and it's been a really good learning process for me. I mean, here I am almost 40 years old trying to be a YouTuber, which is surprisingly more fun than I thought it would be. So it's early days, but I'm having a blast doing it.
Right on. And this is still under the same network umbrella, right? This isn't like your own personal project.
No. Still working very much alongside the Mobile Nations crew, and Michael Fisher is Mr. Mobile,
right?
And Android Central and iMore and all of your favorite mobile people. Excellent. Except for now, I get to play with all the toys and not just phones, which is great.
Yeah, it's nice to kind of venture outside of that that small, you know, rectangular shaped box and go to something, I don't know, just a little bit different. Hue lights, of course. I know that you're a fan of, or at least I assume you're a fan of the Hue lights because you've got a light bulb above your head.
Yes.
A little promotional. I've got those at home, and I just bought another couple because I can't get enough of them, apparently.
Do you hold it above your head, Jason, like that?
I've never done that.
It totally works. No, do it. Go home, hold it above your head, and tell your wife to just wait until it turns on.
Be like, wait for it to connect to Wi-Fi, and then you'll see it do something really cool. And you posted a video today, top five things to do with your phone. What's the most important thing to do with your phone?
Put a password on it. Okay. Lock it up.
I would agree.
Absolutely.
Lock it up.
The thing I wanted to get across with that is I hate seeing people who don't do anything to their phones. They don't even move icons around.
Yeah.
Like customize your phone just a little bit. And half of them don't even know they can do it. That's the hard part.
Every time I look over somebody's shoulder on the subway and I see they have the default background that came with the phone, I'm just like, why? Come on, put a picture. You've got to have something you like. Right. Just do something. Make it your own.
Yeah. Customize it just a little bit. I realized I've had the S8 Plus, which we'll talk about a little bit later, for 24 hours, and I still have no case on it. And that was one of your other tips, is to put a case on it, which I completely agree with. I need to do that.
Mine got a monster scratch on the back, and I have no idea when it happened or how it happened. But, of course, it happened. So, yeah.
And you'll see it every single time you look at
it. Which is funny because I am adamant about being anti-case. I've never put a case on my phone, and And the poor Robin has paid the price for it this time around. But
well, at least you have a phone that can pay the price and still continue on. We'll save this because there's plenty to talk about durability when we get to talking about the S8 Plus. We're going to be discussing a lot of things, of course, the S8 Plus, like we said, Google's potentially upcoming ad blocker in Chrome, multi-user support for Google Home, finally, a hands-on with the large, I already mentioned that, the revised Gear VR, which I have here, have not used yet, but I'm going to be putting it through its paces this week. Xiaomi's plan to come to the U.S. or maybe eventually come to the U.S., Google Play Award nominees, and a whole lot more. See, there's a lot to talk about today. Before we get into it, though, I have a quick question for you, Phil, because you have kids and modern dad, so I assume this is probably a question that's right down your alley. Our Nexus 9, I have two Nexus 9s. Both were Google I/O issued. And one of them has been doing this a little bit, and now when I wiped it to go to Family Link on it, I get this every time I reboot. So I think that Nexus 9 is done for. And
Jason, that's the new Nexus 9 OS overlay. Actually, that's supposed to do that.
Okay, well, I have not trained my eyes to read what that says yet, and I don't know if I have the energy for it. So now I'm in this weird conundrum of, do I buy a Googly tablet with Android and go the Family Link route, which I've done that with the other tablet for my other child, so I understand Family Link at least to a certain degree. Or do I go with the Amazon Kids tablet, which comes with like the year or two of no questions asked replacement, comes with all that free content and stuff. What would be your advice?
How old?
For this child, 7. But I mean, if it amounted to moving to the Amazon tablet world, I would probably do that for both girls because they like things to be even.
I think if they don't need like all the actual Android-y, actual like tablet-y type stuff, then yeah, I think they'll be pretty happy with the Amazon tablet. That's what my 6.5-year-old's been using, and she loves it. And she especially loves that she can call it her tablet. Right. And I let her call it that because it's so cheap. I don't care if she breaks it. She's going to break it at some point.
You know, there's a part of me that feels like I shouldn't do that because I want to it's so stupid, but it's like a part of me that's like, well, no, like I want to project, you know, the true version of Android to my, and let them learn the full scale Android as opposed to like a side path.
A fork.
Yeah, a fork. There we go.
That's, I think it's a little early for that, Jason. Yeah, I think they'll never know. And I think by the time they're old enough to actually care, it will evolve to the point where it doesn't matter. So
I know they'll never know, but I'll know. I'll know.
And soon enough, it's just going to be, can I get iMessage on this or not?
That's right around the corner, I'm sure. But a long ways down the corner. It's a big corner. If I have my way. All right, cool. Well, that's what I was thinking, is that I'd probably go the Amazon route. So if I do that, hey, we'll talk about it on the show. More stuff to talk about. But
there might be a video on that for Modern Dad.
Oh. Already a video?
That was an early one I did on the Amazon tablet way back when.
Fantastic. I'm going to check that out. Because I mean, it sounds really great on paper. Everything that I've seen about the Amazon tablet with the free content and all that kind of stuff. You can still put like YouTube Kids on that and all that stuff.
It's especially for the price,
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you. I knew you were the right person to ask. And now, Brian, you're the right person to ask because we're going in the news. I didn't ask you a question, but whatever. Let's do it.
It's time for the news. We've got our favorite guests on, and you're our favorite audience. Now stay tuned for Android News.
Well, so I've been very outspoken on the show about my opinions of ad blockers, being as a content creator for the past 10, 15 years. Advertising is a way I've helped to pay the bills, but we've seen the ad situation online honestly get out of hand to the point where I don't go to some websites anymore because the ads are so bad. And we've seen ad blockers getting added to browsers left and right. We saw Samsung added it to their browser. We talked a lot about that. But now this past week, we got news that Google has plans to implement an ad blocker directly into Chrome. And this is coming from the Wall Street Journal. And it's saying that it's going to filter certain ad types that pose a bad user experience, include pop-ups, autoplay video ads and sound, interstitial ads with countdown timers. I hope it blocks that dumb Forbes interstitial.
I hate that.
Right? It's the worst.
It's the worst.
And another possibility includes blocking all ads on a site with only some questionable ads. And my own speculation, blocking all the ads that are on a website that aren't AdSense, but
right.
We'll see. So an announcement is likely coming in weeks, which, what's in a couple of weeks? I wonder. So probably my guess is that IO will hear more about this. And I just thought it was funny because one of my coworkers was like, you know, what do you think Google adding ad blocking to Chrome, considering that they make their money off ads? And I thought, you know, hey, with AdSense, they're going to figure out some way for their ads to get through and other ads not to. And that could be a dangerous water. You know, and Google is an ad company that also makes a browser. And if they're blocking bad ads from others and not blocking their own, that could be a sticky wicket. And for those curious, Chrome has got 47.5% of the U.S. market. So it's the dominant browser as of now. Phil, what do you make of this? Do you think Google's getting into some murky waters with this, or is it much needed?
I think there's a seriously big word that's missing, and I'm going back through it just to make sure I'm correct. Contributor. Google contributor. And I have to give Andrew Martinick full credit for this. He was tweeting about it this morning, and just, yes, it made total sense. Google contributor, if you don't remember, you would set aside, say, $10 a month is what I did, actually. And then Google would not show you AdSense ads. I had cats until, on mine.
I did the same thing, Phil. The day I could sign up for it, I did $10. I did the max, and I saw pictures of Morrissey instead of ads, which was great.
One man's cat is another man's Morrissey, as they say. Right,
and vice versa. Yeah. I'm sure Morrissey would be happy with that, too. But then they shut Contributor down a couple of months ago.
Oh, did they?
Contributor's gone. But now we have these rumors of new ad blockers. And I think Andrew's right. I think this would fit perfectly in there. I mean, yes, it can block stuff. But, by the way, we can block our own stuff. And if you can give money directly to the websites, which I had absolutely no problem doing. So I think it's going to be a bigger story than what the Wall Street Journal has here. Or at least more to it.
If someone can figure out, if I was 10 years younger and a little more coding knowledge or whatever, if someone can figure out a way to have a user profile kick a couple of cents to the website they're going to and not see any ads, I would gladly contribute. I would gladly pay for that. If you're going to tell me it's going to cost me a nickel to see a view this page or whatever, you know, whatever it is to monetize the content versus, you know, forcing advertising in my face to monetize the content, I would gladly pay for that. And if anybody can figure it out, I think Google can. And if ad blocking is a part of that, because to their point, I mean, the Chrome team is all about the user experience and the sanctity of the web and stuff like that. And it is getting downright impossible to go to some sites these days, and it's embarrassing. So I don't know. It's hard. I don't know. Jason, how do you feel about this? Where do you net at?
What you were just talking about reminded me of an app. Man, we had someone on from Blendl a while back.
When Mateo. Blendl's great.
Mateo crew. And that was paying per article basis. I don't know what that does for ads. I'm kind of looking through right now, and I'm not sure it necessarily removes ads. But I would guess that if it's mirroring a paid service, that you probably wouldn't get ads, because if you're paying for the service, they're probably not also serving you ads. But as we know with cable TV and other, you know, video streaming services, that isn't always the case. But it really comes down to what Google is the one that would be implementing this, considers a bad user experience ads. And you better believe they're probably not going to hold their ads put their ads under that same umbrella. But then are their ads actually bad user experience ads? I'm sure a lot of people would say they're pretty nondescript. They're out of the way. So maybe they just don't fall into there. But it is interesting that an ad company could make that determination and say, actually, these ads aren't any good. We're not going to show you those. But you're going to see all of our ads because they're all really good.
Well, then that's the question. I mean, we often joke about how Google sometimes the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And this is definitely a case of the left hand is the Chrome team and the positive user experience. And we're going to block bad ads. And we got to they've got to be working with the right hand, which is the ad business.
Right.
I mean, if Google was just an ad company that did this, that'd be one thing. But they're so multifaceted. Right. So this kind of cross section of these two major business units within Google, I'm really curious to see how they handle this and handle the messaging around it.
There was also a browser. Now I'm starting to remember we talked about a browser maybe within the last year. God, what browser was that? That would remove ads from a page and replace it with their own inventory of ads.
Are you talking about Brave?
Yeah, it was Brave.
Brave.
I wonder if Google would. Nah, that's even murkier of water for Google to get into that.
Cool. Well, ultimately, and I can't even imagine what that. There's Brave. Yeah. I mean, the problem for me at least is that there are so many external third party server calls on websites now because of the advertising. And I get it. I mean, like Phil, you're right in the thick of it. I ran a content website for 5 years that was dependent on ads, and I was figuring out ways to do interstitials and have the Expando video ads, whatever I can do to get a higher CPM. And I would jump at the opportunity to not have to do that. And it sucks that we have devalued content so much that it just seems untenable at this point. You know, it's almost makes me wishing that a new internet could exist.
I'm all for anybody trying anything, and I'm all for being able to give money directly to content creators if that's all possible.
Yeah, absolutely. What Google is considering bad ads would be pop-ups, autoplay video ads with sound, which, I hate those.
Oh, it's the worst.
Fire with those. Pre-stitial ads with countdown timers. So, I agree. All three of those, I'm pretty hateful.
I mean, just like today I went to, unfortunately, I made the mistake of looking at some current events, and I clicked on a link to read a particular article about something going on in our country, and it was like, I forget what reputable news service, and this dumb video ad plays, and then as I scroll down, the video minimizes and goes down to the corner, and it's like, and I'm trying to find the pause button, and I was like, close the tab, I don't need to read it.
Yeah,
it's just like, exactly, it's bad. Bad.
Well, I guess we'll see. Obviously, this is early days, and Phil, like you're saying, this could be a much bigger story than what we're reading here, which are just pieces of the picture. So I'm sure we'll find out sometime soon.
I hope Phil's right. Phil, I hope you and Andrew are right, and if they bring back a contributor in a bigger way, I would sign up in a nanosecond. I just want to see more Morrissey again. That's all.
Yeah, I know. You're missing your Morrissey. And you're missing your cats, Phil. Google made a lot of people happy last week. Google rolled out an update to the Home app that enables the Google Home to recognize up to 6 different voices, finally allowing for multi-user support. We've certainly talked about this many times on the show. I think anyone that has a Google Home has wondered when this would happen. When we heard about this, the announcement of Google Home at I/O last year, it was almost immediately glaring to me, like, how the heck are they? Why is this not there at launch? Well, we have it now. Apparently, it will recognize our voices, different voices, and propose information tied to the account of the voice that it recognizes. So there we go. We wondered how this was going to be done. This is how Google chose to do it. I think it's the right way to go, is to have voice recognition. They obviously know how to do that, so it makes sense that they would roll that into Google Home.
Have you used it yet?
I have not used it yet with my wife. No, because I haven't had a chance to grab her phone from her for a second to set it up or show her how to set it up and everything. But I've set myself
up. Yeah, same here too. Yeah, like literally the day this rolled out was like things were so busy, and then my girlfriend went away, and so now I'm like, I'm just waiting for her to come home so we can set this up.
That is so funny. We've probably all mentioned many times, God, I can't wait for Google Home to have multi-user account. Here it is, like a week later, we're like, yeah, I haven't set it up yet.
because when it got announced, Jason, you tweeted about it and I responded and I honestly didn't think we were going to get multi-voice recognition. I just thought it was going to be too complicated and they weren't going to take the risk to have it not work perfectly. And I was almost positive we were going to get different wake words or something like that. Where you say your name, you say, okay, gee, it's Ron or whatever it is. So I'm glad. That's why I'm anxious to try it. Life, ironically, life in the home gets in the way. So
yes, exactly. All right. Speaking of the home, we got some emails.
Yes. And it's funny because I love these emails because I was literally just talking about this topic earlier today. So first up, Michelle from Dayton, Ohio writes in and says, love the show, but I disagree with Ron on the quote unquote genius of the Burger King ad. An ad is genius if it carries the message in a positive manner. The continuing conversation regarding the Burger King ad involved how annoying the ad was enforcing a response out of everyone's Google Home. In fact, it was so annoying that Google had to change the device response to avoid further annoying Google homeowners.
Nope.
I know. Exactly.
No. This is like the trick question they ask in every mass comm class as you start journalism school. And that is, what is the purpose of a newspaper? To tell the truth, to protect the public. No, it's to make money.
Nope. Yep.
That's why.
It's to sell ads. Google didn't shut the wake word down because it was annoying Google Home users. Listen, there's not that many Google Home users to be annoyed. Right. They shut it down because someone was monetizing their device in a way that they want to monetize. Like that was the whole gist of shutting it down, was that Burger King didn't call them and say, hey, we're going to do this. How much do we have to pay you to get this whole thing? You know, and that's the whole, they already were trying to try, you know, rolling out ads on the Google Home with Beauty and the Beast. Right. Like it was money. It had nothing to do with annoying. And also, and I don't want to argue with Michelle, because Michelle, thank you for watching the show and I appreciate it. Michelle is
representative of a decent amount of emails.
Sure.
Just FYI. So
what I would like to know is, if the decent amount of the emails, how many of those of you work in advertising or marketing? Because everyone I've spoken to in advertising and marketing have all went, oh yeah, that was really good. Like everybody was like almost unanimous, like, oh yeah, that was good. So,
and that's not the same as thinking that it is good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like just because it's a good ad doesn't mean it's still not kind of a dickish thing.
But that definitely does illustrate a disconnect around how marketers feel about the actual audience, the actual people receiving the message. It's less about respecting their space and their privacy and whatever, and it's more about whatever you can do to make sure that they hear my message is fair game. That was brilliant because of that. I'm not saying that was brilliant. I'm just saying that that's how they feel. And that's, I think, what rubs people the wrong way.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong. I don't disagree with you, Michelle, in the annoying factor, although I'm kind of amused by the annoying factor. So maybe I disagree with you there. But purely spoken from a, like, they're talking about this ad in advertising school now, like, and they will, you know what I mean? Like that's the representation. And Jason, you have a great point that that's how advertisers look at users, you know, and it looks at those out there, like we're still 2 weeks later still talking about it.
Yeah,
that's a good ad.
Yeah,
right. That's why they paid that agency to do it. So we also got a voicemail from James Thatcher, and we got a little bit of an edit of that, right, Jason?
Yeah, it was a little bit on the long side. James had written it, or had left a video mail last year, I think, with a rant, and so he's like, I think I'm gonna, you know, call in with a rant every once in a while. This is my rant. Anyways, here's the crux of his thoughts on the Burger King ad. I cut it down.
You all thought this was a great idea. This was new viral marketing. This is great ad copy. No, this is not, guys. I'm sorry. It's not. This was equivalent to a Nigerian prince trying to make me a millionaire, or to someone in a foreign country trying to sell me little blue pills. This is something Google has tried to prevent in Gmail forever. It's called spam. This was nothing more than spam. This was unwanted, unrequested emails and advertisements in an attempt to entice me to do something that I didn't want to do.
What do you think? Is this the same thing as spam? It kind of, it's, no. It's, yeah, it's an interesting analogy.
It's an interesting analogy.
Wrong.
It's
not,
but it's not the Nigerian prince. It's not malicious in intent. I mean, don't get me wrong. I haven't touched Burger King since the 90s, so I'm not advocating Burger King in any way. Like, I do not eat – it's garbage food.
You're missing out with the Whopper.
Yeah.
It's come a long way over the years.
I wouldn't say I'm missing it, but
you're missing it. Yeah.
Listen, if I'm going to be overweight, I'm going to be overweight with good food. That's my motto in life.
All right.
But anyway, I think it's this new thing was introduced in the people's home. What is an innovative way to interact with it? If a brand you liked did it, the story would be much different, I think.
Yeah, personally. I wonder about that.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. We talked about Burger King for two, maybe 3 weeks in a row now. You're welcome, Burger King, or something. But it's time to thank an actual sponsor of the Twit Network, and that is LegalZoom. LegalZoom's awesome. I used LegalZoom years ago before I ever worked for Twit for our will and testament, and it was just a super easy process. There are five things that you can count on when you're using LegalZoom for your estate plan. One, reliability. For over 15 years, millions of people have trusted LegalZoom for wills, living trusts, and more, including myself, like I just said. Two, guidance. You don't have to figure out on your own if a will or living trust is best for you. With your estate plan from LegalZoom, you'll work with an independent attorney to create a plan that fits your needs. Three, flexibility. If you have a family or you own anything that you care about, you should really have an estate plan. It's easy to make updates along the way as your family grows or when you, say, buy a new home, for example. Four, helpful support. They have all the right people standing by. They're ready for your questions. They're all ready to help, all based in the U.S. And five, no surprises. LegalZoom isn't a law firm, so you won't get charged by the hour. Instead, you're going to get a complete transparency and upfront pricing with the services at LegalZoom. So do the right thing for you and your family by setting up your estate plan. You've been meaning to do it. It's time to set it up. You can do that with LegalZoom today. And don't forget to enter AAA at checkout, and you'll save even more. That's LegalZoom.com. Use the code AAA at checkout. We thank LegalZoom for their support. All right, it's time for a few hardware things. Things isn't very glorious, I realize, but
I feel like that should be our new segment. It's a few hardware things. It's hardware, like, said tentatively, like, it's a few hardware things.
So I'm going to go ahead and unlock my phone with my eyes. There, I just did it. It was so fast you didn't even see it. I'm just going to unlock my phone with my eyes. See? There it is. I'm not using the fingerprint button on the back because I can't reach it ever. But I am unlocking it pretty quickly with the iris scan. On the S8, the Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus, I got it in my hands for the first time 24 hours ago. So I'm very early on in my kind of time with the device. I know, Phil, you have the S8 Plus as well, right? It's the larger one?
I have the regular S8 here. Oh, but okay. First, I'm a little disappointed that you didn't just tell us that you unlocked your phone with the power of your mind.
It's kind of the same thing. It's like I'm thinking right now that I want in my phone, and it just happens. It's kind of the same
thing. That is pretty good. Yeah, no, I've got the smaller S8 here, and I'm mostly in liking it, sort of. Maybe I might have ranted into a camera about it for a little while today, actually.
Glowing review of the Samsung Galaxy S8.
It's not that it's a bad phone at all. It's really not. It's a really, really good Samsung phone.
Yeah. I promise we won't spend a whole lot of time on this because we did dive into it pretty deep last week with Flo and her smaller S8. But this is the S8 Plus. If you want to see how it stacks up in size, here, let me get, you know, notifications off that phone. To my Google Pixel XL, it's slightly larger, little slimmer, and way curvier, I guess.
I have a fix to your fingerprint problem, but you're not going to like it.
Which fingerprint problem? The I can't reach it, or that I leave lots of fingerprint marks on it?
No, that you can't reach it. I put a case on mine, and I hit the fingerprint sensor every time now because the case is right next to it, so I know where it is. It makes it super simple.
That makes a lot of sense. And that's what I'm going to do, because honestly, this phone, I'm just waiting for me to break it. Because
that's what they call a life hack.
Well, honestly, that's what I have. I have a case on here. Get Evernote away. I have a case on the Pixel, and it helps me there too. Thing. Right? Like there's just that etching point that makes it really easy to just jump right in to find it immediately.
So is that safe to say that the fingerprint scanner placement is bad design on both phones? That you need to have a case attached to it to give you a better sense of where it, you know what I mean?
It's the Pixel didn't bother me as much because it's got it's indented ever so slightly.
Yeah.
But I tell you, the LG G6 doesn't have any indentation, and I'm really bad on it, and the GS8 doesn't have anything. So yeah, I absolutely do not like the GS8 fingerprint design.
Yeah, and it's super close. Like, it doesn't feel any different than the camera, right? Like, there's no, like, tactile difference between the two. There's a slight little bump here with the border on both. So that's, like, that would be the only indication that you have when you're not actually looking at the fingerprint reader. And it's super close to the camera. It's just bad placement. Like, you just don't know. I never know for sure that I'm actually hitting it. Having a case on there, that makes a lot of sense to me. But like I said, like, once I set up the iris scan, I kind of forgot about using the fingerprint reader because now it works so fast that I just don't need to do it.
Yeah, but here's cool the thing. And you should appreciate this too. You're in California. I'm in Florida. What do we have a lot of in those two states?
Sun.
Sun. You know what the iris scanner doesn't look through?
Oh, that messes it up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a thing. It's a thing.
All right, fine.
Wow, the curse of living in the two sunshine states. Oh.
Yeah.
All right,
as
fine.
As it was gray and wet and cold in New York today.
Don't you wish you were us, Ron?
A little bit.
Okay, but I mean, just real quick thoughts. I do like the kind of sleek, rounded design of it over the last 24 hours. Though, like I said, I feel like I'm going to break it at any moment. The sucker is almost all glass except for the edges. And because it's rounded, that means that no matter how you drop this, it's probably going to hit some glass and you're going to get some spider webbing at the very least. I think, man, who was it? It was somebody just did a durability test. And I mean, they said it's horrible. Square Trade. There we go. I had to dance.
Glass still breaks, huh?
I mean, glass still breaks, but there are some phones that, like, you have a less likelihood of dropping it and having it be guaranteed to break. And with this one, you're almost guaranteed to break it if the sucker drops out of your hand. So get a case.
I can't believe an insurance company came up with that.
Okay, fair enough. But, I mean, would you not agree, though, Phil?
No, totally, totally.
I mean, you dropped the sucker one time.
GS7, yeah.
Yeah, there is no going back. I know. I had the same thing with my S7, so I know what's going to happen with me, the S8, if I don't get a case on it really soon. And that transition just never gets old, Brian. Thank you.
It just really never does, yeah. So,
what else? Bixby? I don't want Bixby.
No.
Bixby.
Oh, my. There's a statue right outside my office. It's a bust of Martin Luther King. And go on my Twitter. I put a picture. Yeah, I don't know who it thought it saw, but it was not the Reverend Doctor.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. So bad. It is so bad.
And not to mention, and maybe this is something that only like parents with little kids that are always like finding my phone and want to get in it, even though it has a lock screen on it and I don't want them in my phone, would do. But they find that Bixby button and it works from lock screen. It takes them into a usable portion of Bixby and I can't figure out how to disable it other than I guess I could disable Bixby entirely, right? Can you do that?
If only there were an app suggestion coming up in a little while that could potentially take care of this for you.
Like the way you think, modern dad.
If only.
Bixby button, easy to hit when you want volume, but that's growing pains. I think I'd get used to that over time. I love the pressure-sensitive home button. Personally, I feel like super satisfying, and I just love pushing it. But I think you had a complaint about that, Phil, right?
Hang on. I got to stretch because
you have nothing good to say about it.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
That's what I have to say about it.
Convince me. Why is it not good?
It's like they took what Apple has. I mean, it's very obvious. They have half of a home button like you would get if it had a fingerprint sensor under it, but it doesn't.
Yeah. That is a big lack.
It's like it's trying to do 3D touch, but it doesn't have to. What is there about this home button that you need it to do that a normal on-screen home button does not accomplish?
Absolutely nothing. I just like the way it feels.
You just like it when things go bzzz in your hand like
that. I don't
know.
I appreciate the... it's stupid. It's totally silly and it's not functional at all. But I like the fact that like a little bit of extra pressure actually does something. And I guess what I want is I want more of that.
But it doesn't. It doesn't do anything. I mean, it wakes the phone up. That's it.
Yeah, but I mean, if I just tap lightly, I get it nothing. If I push down, I feel that click. I like that. Yeah, it really has very limited use. It's really kind of pointless at this point. If there was a fingerprint reader built into that, that would be top notch. But I totally get what you're saying. I completely agree with you, actually. There's something very satisfying about it.
I turned the sensitivity all the way up, and it's totally changed the way I feel about it, by which I mean it made a normal home button out of it.
So you turn the sensitivity up so all you have to do is tap it and it works.
Yeah.
Just like light tap on the top. Like any other capacitive.
It's fine. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah, I might even get there too where I'm like, okay, why do I need to push down harder in order to do it? But right now I'm enjoying doing it. It's a satisfying click. UI and performance fluid. As it should be, because it's got the Snapdragon 835, so that's nice. The Samsung Lair, I don't know. I don't mind the Samsung Lair on this device.
Really? How do you feel about app shortcuts on your Pixel?
Well, I know that you do not like them, or I know that there's something about the S8 that you do not like about those.
So app shortcuts, and to be fair, most of the free world does not have app shortcuts yet because it's an Android, 7 thing? I forget. So you long press on an icon.
Right.
I can show that. And if you do it right. So that's Samsung's right there. Samsung has the same thing on every single icon, right? You can rearrange it. You can select multiple ones, which is actually really cool and really useful when you first set up the phone. I will never again use it because I've already used it once. It's just such a waste. So, I mean, you put another launcher on it and you will get so much functionality back with your app shortcuts.
Yeah.
It's just not necessary. Yeah. Do you have any folders on there? Can I yell about folders?
Sure. Yell about this audio folder here.
Oh my God. Could that waste any more space?
I completely agree with you, Phil.
Jeez.
I've wanted that. Every time I set up these folders, I'm like, condense it down into the center. If I'm one-handed, like, why is all that stuff all the way up there? Put it down here. I've only got 3 damn icons in there.
Right. And see where you're tapping in the middle there. You would think that would close the folder, but it doesn't.
Nope. Got to be
out. Why? Oh, my God. It's so bad.
All right. I'm coming around to your thinking, Phil. I'm happy you're on today to talk me down.
All right. I'm okay.
No, I appreciate it. I have in here, Phil's, what's your take? But I already know your take.
That's my take.
And I appreciate it. Some are complaining about red display. I'm not sure that I'm seeing a red display necessarily, but I guess not everybody's seeing it on theirs either. So there you go. How's yours? Red?
No. It looks normal.
Okay. They say they can fix it with a software update anyways.
Sure.
So there's that. Also, because we pre-ordered, have the updated Gear VR headset, which is really just a lot like, if not nearly identical, to the previous Gear VR headset. You can replace these so it's USB-C or regular USB to latch the phone in if you need to. The big difference, of course, is the controller that came with this one anyways, the special new Oculus-fashioned controller, and I'm going to be putting this headset through its paces. Actually, I think I'm doing a short for new screensavers for this weekend's episode, kind of comparing this against the Daydream View, the two headsets to see which one I like better. So I'm going to play with that this week and come up with some opinions. Have you played around with this at all, Phil?
I did at the event. And the headset, I don't know if it was just event wonk, but the headset was not comfortable for me at all. So, and something felt off. So that might have just been me. I think Samsung has done a really good job with VR and with all the Oculus stuff. I just can't use it for more than 5 minutes at a time. It's my problem.
Oh, okay. In my experience with the previous Gear VR versus Daydream, I like the Gear VR a little bit better. I actually find it to be a little bit more comfortable, even though it's bigger, and definitely better field of view. The field of view is wider on the Samsung version versus what you get on Daydream. Daydream's a little bit narrower view, but this is
the controller is a game changer, though. That's huge.
Yeah, this is a really nice controller. I'm stoked to use it. So, anyways, more to come on that. But we definitely got an email that was like, man, you guys talk about the Samsung Galaxy S8 a lot on the last episode. So we only gave you 10 more minutes.
Is I was going to say, so we did more. Yeah
exactly. That's what you get. Ron, you've got the next thing.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm sure if you don't want to hear about the Samsung S8, you're probably curious, why isn't Xiaomi selling phones in America? So recently, Xiaomi told Engadget that it really feels sorry for not serving the U.S. market with its phones, but that its supply chain and resources, the company is working hard with its 30 regions and developing markets. That just, I read that like with seeping passive aggressiveness, by the way. Like, they feel sorry that they're not selling them, but we've got 30 other regions to work with. So, okay, America. But I'm adding that editorializing there. So who knows if that's how Xiaomi actually feels. But so Xiaomi says a focus on mass markets as opposed to premium and elite things. Hugo Barra, when he was with Xiaomi, hinted at possibly coming into the U.S. in 2017. But now Xiaomi senior VP Wang Zhang now says it might be more like 2019. And Xiaomi doesn't want to upset carriers in the U.S. by selling direct to consumers for short-term gain. So it seems if Xiaomi really isn't that worried about America and they're taking it slow and trying to do it as right as they could get. Although I wish that they would favor the consumers more than the carriers, but business.
Yeah. I guess anyone who in the U.S. who really wants to get one can buy one through third-party outlets or whatever, order it online on this thing called the internet. Why would selling direct to consumers in the near term upset carriers, do you think, Phil?
Because they want to. Sorry.
Yeah, carriers want you in the store, and it's not even about buying a phone at that point. It's about buying all the other crap that's in the store alongside the phones.
Or being influenced into buying other pieces of service that they can provide to you on a monthly recurring basis.
Yeah.
Okay. If they weren't able to strike a carrier deal in the short term, but they started selling direct to consumers through their site for the next couple of years, would that motion upset carriers? Because ZTE, I think, is doing that right now.
Not as much. That's just your normal deals with this sort of thing. I mean, when I read it, it really sounded more just like the not licensing, but getting approval to work in the U.S. and they just still haven't gotten it. I mean, Huawei just finally got it.
Yeah. And there was a time not too long ago where the argument against Xiaomi coming to the U.S. was, well, all your phones look like the iPhone or Samsung phones. So if you do that, you're opening yourself up to a bunch of litigation immediately. We're beyond that, though, because I think anyways, right? Xiaomi's doing a lot of very unique, original design with their devices. It's hard to look at some of them anyways. I can't speak for all of them and immediately say, this reminds me of an iPhone. But they all kind of...
Yeah, that way. I got to think most people are past that at this point. I don't know if lawyers are, but lawyers are most people.
That's very true. True words never spoken. Well, speaking of ZTE, I just mentioned, and you know, we get calls for talk about phones that aren't just at the top, aren't always just premium flagship devices. And last week we talked about phones that emphasize battery over everything else. ZTE and Sprint apparently have a new device that's aimed at Boost Mobile called the ZTE Max XL. 6-inch 1080p LCD display, octa-core Snapdragon 425, 2 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs storage, 13 megapixel rear-facing camera, Android 7.1.1 at launch, which is nice, 3990 milliamp hour battery. So pretty large battery for $130.
It's not as big as it could be, Jason. It could be bigger.
They can always,
as we talked about last week.
It could always be bigger. But that's pretty good. Almost 4,000 milliamp hour battery in a $130 device with a 6-inch.
That's impressive.
Display is pretty good. So, anyways, you can get a $28 web only promo discount at the moment, so you can knock $28 off that price. Works on Boost Mobile at launch. They say that they're going to be releasing a specific to Sprint and Virgin Mobile version sometime soon. So,
hey, for $100 for that doesn't sound like a bad deal, to be honest with you.
Not bad at all. So there you go.
It's pretty good. All right. So speaking of big batteries, we did get an email from Felipe wrote in and said, just to let you know that I've been following your podcast for a long time, 3 to 4 years, and I've been using Android since the HTC G2. I've gone through many different flagships, but decided to go for the Lenovo P2 a week before Mobile World Congress because I really love large battery phones. Telling you, there's something to this, the large battery phone. You can confirm this one is a 5,100 milliamp phone and comes from the Motorola side of Lenovo with a stock Android and a few minor features added in. Since February, I've never charged the phone during the day, not even once. It included the last day of Mobile World Congress and trip back to Portugal with 8 hours of screen on time, and I ended at 27% that day.
Dang.
Last week, I did a 5-hour tour on a bike around 50 miles with the screen on the entire time and Runkeeper going on in the back, used GPS for navigation for an hour, and managed to get to the end of the day above 30%.
Wow.
Other people get 10 to 15 hours of screen on time out of this phone.
No, he's just bragging.
Yeah, 10 to 15 hours of screen on time? That's impossible.
You might say that the Snapdragon 625 is a mid-range SoC and that the phone is also mid-range as well. What I can tell you is that no other flagship that I had before allowed me to use the phone so freely as this one, not even close. And the performance is great, so no complaints there. It's really mind-blowing how better the phone is compared to flagships, and that's largely due to the SoC, which is mid-range but low power and built on 14nm.
Why do we keep talking about, quote, mid-range? I'm really freaking out tonight, aren't I?
Yeah,
you are. I love it.
It's good.
That mid-range is bad. It's a different segment of processor built that way for a number of different reasons. It doesn't have to do all the things that an 835 does. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
It's like not putting a Corvette engine in my Civic out there because that'd just be awesome, actually.
Never mind. I changed my opinion completely.
Yeah. It's not putting a 500 horsepower engine in a 1,000-pound car. It's just not necessary and, in fact, not efficient. 625 is built to be efficient as hell, and we're going to see a lot more of it here in the coming days and weeks. And that and the capacity of the battery itself is why this thing runs forever. It's not, you know, mid-range doesn't mean bad in this case. It's just a different specification of processor.
Totally agreed. And I think that observation he made that no phone has – he's never been freer to use his phone before than with this phone. And we so lean towards the high-end flagship $700 phone with the crazy, you know, like what all the stuff that, you know, that gets people excited with the cameras and all stuff like that. But make a phone that works and lasts a long time, and that's what people want. And that's what, like, so why can't a flagship phone be a mid-range phone for that reason, from a usability standpoint, not from a technology standpoint?
And what does flagship premium even mean? Right. It means that you're topping out the expensive specs, essentially, and making a flashy-looking phone. The S8 Plus is a very flashy-looking phone, yet you're still going to encounter probably standard battery performance is what we've gotten with every Galaxy S, you know, flagship device that comes before it, with moderate improvements. Bleak in chat room, you know, makes the point, and I think this ties into what you were just saying, Phil, about how this is mid-range, air quotes, mid-range, for a reason. That's how it gets this performance.
Yeah.
Not on top of the fact that it's a huge battery, it's also, you know, a very efficient processor underneath that isn't necessarily pushing everything to its limits. It's peeling it back, and what you get as a result is extended battery performance.
It's the combination of the parts to give you that. Yeah, and right. I mean that's exactly what I took from it, and that's what the argument that I'm making here is that, you know, how good is a phone if a phone can do all this stuff, but the processor is so, you know, power intensive that it drains the, you know, like it's all that combination that leads to a poor experience. And when you have a phone that does a good job, there's a reason why more people buy Civics than Ferraris, right?
Yeah.
Because you can actually get to the store every day and not have to worry about, or say Jaguar. Jaguars break down a bit more, but anyway.
you're talking out of my depth. It has four wheels. Great. I want one. All right, cool. It's time to chat a little bit about some apps, app things. All right.
App things.
THANGS. Google has announced its nominees for its Play Awards, the best apps in 12 categories, and they're all selected by Googlers. 60 apps and games in total. Winners, of course, as they've done the last couple of years, will be announced at Google I/O next month. I have to pull up the list to start looking at this. Did you guys have a chance to look through here? Can you concur? Do you agree with what you're seeing?
Looking at it now, I got a hard time with Netflix getting. I mean, I guess best TV experience, but that's like it's kind of the reason why we wouldn't bring Netflix to the arena, right? Like, of course, Netflix. Like, give me an app I never heard of, but I guess they're doing a good job. It's nice to see Haystack TV in there, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love this list because there's so much in here that I don't know and that I've never used.
Kind of blows me away because, like, up until a few weeks ago, I had a separate app show that was four apps every single week, and you know, at a certain point I was like, man, it's really hard to find really top quality apps to feature on a very regular basis inside a category. But then you look at a list like this and you're like, actually, there's a ton out there that's still completely untapped. This is a good arena list right here.
I was just saying, Jason, don't stop talking at some point because I'm going through it. I'm going, I haven't heard of this one. I haven't heard of this one.
Stop spilling the secrets.
I'm not installing things on my other screen here. Don't mind me.
I've decided I'm changing my app right now. No, but there's a lot of stuff here to dive into and a lot of stuff that we have talked about. But like you said, good to see Haystack in there. What else? Hearthstone was obviously a really big game for the year, multiplayer game. So I'm not surprised to see that in there. Fabulous. We've featured on the show. And Pokemon Go. Okay. Fire Emblem Heroes. I thought that was a lot of fun, but those are kind of obvious ones. There's just a lot of good stuff in here. Sea Hero Quest. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, no, looking at the standout startup ones, CastBox is a podcast app that I've looked at, I played with. Discord, I feel like we talked about, you know, so yeah. Simple Habit I've seen before. It's a good list.
Nice. Excellent. Cool. So anyways, they'll have the announcements at Google I.O. and we'll find out which apps reign supreme.
So usually I'm pretty forgiving in the world of startups and acquisitions and things like that. You know, like, you know, a startup emerges and they make a good product, they get bought by another company, and then things change or whatever. Normally I'm like, yeah, that's part of the process. But there have been a couple of times that I've gotten downright upset, and it's and I feel like now I'm hearkening back to my Twin Peaks podcast. It's happening again. Microsoft announced that they are shutting down Wunderlist, which is the to-do list app that I've been using for the past several years. They acquired it 2 years ago, and they're sunsetting it. And it's going to be replaced by Microsoft To Do, and which is a new task-based productivity app. And To Do allows you to have lists, notes, deadlines, reminders, and that's about it for now. It's supposed to be simpler than Wunderlist at the moment, which it very much is. Intelligent suggestions that dynamically pick tasks from your list that require your attention first. You can tap the light bulb, and To Do will analyze any task that didn't get done from the day before and bring forward the most important ones to tackle first. There's no collaboration tools in it yet, no tagging, hashtags, folders, and not even Office integration. That's coming soon. And I got very angry, and I angry tweeted last week about this, saying, Microsoft, I won't even look at To Do. I'm so angry because Wunderlist was so perfectly elegant in what it did. And now I got to find a new To Do list app.
What exactly did you like so much about Wunderlist?
But even then it was just so simple. Like I had, you know, a couple of like folders or like I had a list for each basically project I'm working on. And then within that list, I had sub tasks for, you know, okay, so if this project, here's the list of things I need to do this project. And it just, you know, my requirements for a to-do app is I need a desktop app and I need a phone app. And not all of them have that. You'd be surprised, you know. Like, and a to-do list app that I can just use on my phone is useless to me because I'm on my computer for, you know, 12 hours a day, right? So, it needs to be able to seamlessly go through both. And Wunderlist just did the job, and it was in the background. It didn't get out of the way. It didn't scream at you. It didn't. It was just this handy pal that helped me get my stuff done. And looking at Microsoft To Do, like someone in my office who also used Wunderlist when this was announced, immediately went to see Microsoft To Do and was like, she was like, this is a mess. I'm not using this. So, you know, I don't know. I want to give it the benefit of the doubt, but they just did this with Sunrise like a year or two ago. Sunrise was like the best calendar app I've ever used, and Microsoft bought it, and then they shuttered it and rolled it into Office. And that's great that they're doing it, but the same thing happened with Mail. Remember Mailbox got shut down by Dropbox, and I threw a fit? Like, just let the apps exist. Just, you know,
they bought them for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hold them in. Bring them all in. I would imagine that what To Do app is on your phone is a very personal question. So I'm going to ask you, Phil, what To Do list app is on your phone?
I don't do lists.
You don't do lists?
No, I used Google Keep for a while because it was part of Google Home, but they screwed that up. I haven't made any lists since then.
I use Keep for like the shopping list because the Google Home thing, but I use Keep for like little random, like just, oh, I got to remember this note or like I'll be out with my friends and like a band will come up and we'll talk about it or something. And I'll like, oh, let me jot that down. It's just like Evernote, but I don't use that. I need something more formal for my to-do lists. So it was funny because when I tweeted this, a bunch of folks who follow me responded, and it looks like the two I'm going to give a test drive to Todoist, which we've had on the show before, right? The Todoist. They've got a desktop app. They responded to me on Twitter encouraging me to try it. But then one I'd never heard of, which has been around for 10 years, Nozbe, Nozbe.
I've never heard of that.
And this one looks really interesting. It's got a desktop app, an Android app. It looks really interesting. It looks really good. So I'm going to give them both a try. We'll see what happens. So.
Man, I've never heard of Nozbe.
Yeah, I know. I've never heard of Nozbe either. And then like on their logo, it's like 10 years. I'm like, wow, they've been around for 10 years. All right. Well, that's good.
The site seems to emphasize iOS. Do they have an Android version?
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
they do. Okay.
Yep.
Huh. Interesting. I've never heard of Nozbe before.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, have to look that up. Yeah, okay. Cool. Good tips there. I'll put that in my to-do list to check those out. Minor keep, basically. And then Evernote for notes. I can't pull myself away from Evernote for whatever reason.
Oh, I could end up from Evernote. Like years ago when Evernote started having those security problems and things like that, I was like, I'm out.
It's hard for me at this point. I'm so embedded. My notes and my system and everything is so embedded in the Evernote world that it's next to impossible for me to think about how I transition to something else. Yeah. I'm sure at some point I'll need to, but. We have an email from Bradley Erickson who says, for the past 10 years, I have learned to use BlackBerry, WebOS, Windows Phone, iOS, and now stock Android when I bought an unlocked Nexus 6P around a year and a half ago. Recently, I received a replacement 6P due to funky battery issues with the original one and had to deal with setting up the new phone. Maybe I have poor memory, but this has to be the most painful experience of any of the other platforms I have dealt with, taking me hours and hours to replicate my phone. I realize that some phone manufacturers provide their own software to do this, but what is available in stock Android is pretty weak sauce, and the software that Huawei has seems to only work with their non-Nexus phones. Am I missing something? I used the phone backup and restore, which gets the Google stuff working, and then had to go to the Play Store and download most everything else from the My Apps and Games menu. I had to set up my app folders, my wallpapers, my special ringtones, notification settings, allowances, etc. Is there some easier way to do this? Annoyed in Arkansas, Bradley. I feel like because I think we're all kind of in the same boat, at least the three of us on this show, and Flo would probably be there too. We've played with enough phones on a regular basis to kind of get the dance that's required to go from one phone to the next. And I can set up a new phone pretty quick at this point, whether it happens in the official way that Google intends or whether it doesn't, because sometimes, even though Google has their settings, settings process in there to recognize my other phones, it doesn't always work that way. Or it does. I select it. I'm like, yeah, install all the apps from the Pixel XL. And it'll start the process, but then something happens along the way and it kicks you out of it. And then you have to do it manually from there. It's never perfect. I mean, sometimes it is, but it's never perfect the time.
I feel like it's gotten way better. Like I was, you know, like I remember my mind was blown when I first got the 6P and it did that automatically. And I was like, whoa, cause I'd never had that before. And then when I went back to the Nexus 5, it did it and I became to expect it. But when I got the next bit Robin, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to have a similar experience as Bradley because it wasn't a Nexus phone. It was outside of it and it worked the way I wanted it to. It put in all my apps, kind of restored the whole situation, which is great. I'm surprised that it didn't work for him and I feel bad for that. I'm sorry.
I mean, I've been there.
Yeah, it should. Mm-hmm. And especially, I mean, you need to make sure you have a good backup, but especially now that you get to choose which phone you want to restore from, and it usually gives me a choice of like my five most recent, I guess.
Yeah.
Then you've got a better chance. And also, if you're using a third-party launcher, and I don't know about all of them, Action Launcher is the one I've always used, at least outside the Pixel, but it allows you to back up your layout to like Google Drive. So, and if the app's not installed, it just doesn't worry about it. Mm-hmm. So I was actually able to move from, I had set up the G6 first. And then when I got the GS8, I just installed Action Launcher and said, restore that layout. And it did. And there were some of the apps that I hadn't installed yet. And it didn't freak out about those. And that worked really well.
Yeah, and it puts everything in its place. I mean, but I've had that with Pixel or with the Nexus / Pixel process, kind of Google standard process, where I do it. And as it's setting it up, you've got, I think it's actually the Pixel Launcher. Are they still calling it the Pixel Launcher? I think they are. Anyways, where as it's setting it up, it has like the ghost icons there that they're black and white until the apps move over. So it's like it retained my settings process. However, I will say yesterday when I was setting up the Galaxy S8, it went through the process and it said, do you want to pull over the apps from your previous phones? And not one of the previous ones that it showed me was my Pixel XL, the thing I use every single day. It was like really weird, random phones from my phone library.
Yeah, I had that problem too.
And I don't understand. I'm like, give me a drop down because I know that you keep track of all this stuff and I know it's backed up. So I know that they're up there. I don't understand why I didn't get it.
I always wonder whenever something like this whenever something like this doesn't work for us, I assume it's because it's us.
Yeah.
And me too. There's so many phones that we test and all that sort of stuff. So like, I'm not surprised about that, but like, you would think that the most recent phone and the one that you spend the most time on would show up somewhere. Like, that's very odd. Yeah.
I would think so. But it didn't. So anyways, I don't know if that answers your question, Bradley, other than letting you know that misery loves company and we're there right there with you sometimes. Sometimes it works for us and sometimes it doesn't. But when it works, it's magical. When it works, you're just like,
it does.
That was really
it's
easy. Amazing. And you set your phone down and you come back to it a half an hour later and everything's just where it needs to be. And it's beautiful. All right. Without further ado, it's time for the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Last week's poll, bit.ly/AAAPoll 314. That URL keeps changing. My apologies. And looking at it, it looks like it's the winner, Adobe Premiere Clip. That was Flo's app. Way to go, Flo.
It was.
53%. Of the votes for Adobe Premiere Clip. Second place, 60 dB. Oh, put that back up again. Sorry, I don't have it up on my screen. Thank you, Brian. 30.9%, and third place, Wireflow Wireframe Design, 16.1%.
And with that, this is what we're talking about with the arena now. So Flo moves out of last place with that number one finish, and guests fall into last place. So Phil, you got to help pull the guests out of the basement here. Guests have 40 points. Flo's got 41 points. Jason, you're in second with 43 points, and I'm still in first with 46 points. So it is neck and neck.
I need to go to bit.ly real quick. I've already made next week's poll, but I need to log into bit.ly because this is one of those weeks where I'm showing off every single app in the arena, so I don't have the luxury of doing this while somebody else shows off their app. Okay, so I've done that.
We appreciate it.
No, it's all good. Okay, so Ron, you are up first, and I have a dedicated phone for your app. Even.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, this one, I just thought this was neat. Here's the thing. I've seen a recent, and Jason and Phil, maybe you've seen it too. I've seen a recent emergence of apps that are in the App Store with the unreleased tag after them, which I don't quite understand. Yeah, like they're not beta, but they're not released. I don't know. But
yep.
I was able to download it and check it out, and this one I found was called Flick Launcher. And this is a launcher that allows you to at first glance replicate the Pixel kind of launcher experience for any phone, right? So it just works as any launcher. But it, in terms of the little search bar on the top and things like that. But addition from that, it is just a nicely designed, very simple launcher that gives a lot of the things of launchers that we like. As you saw there, Jason, playing with it, you had an app draw that you could pull up from the bottom, which is always a good thing. But then the controls of a launcher that I find myself wanting, more so, and I don't actually right now I'm using the Nextbit launcher and I don't have them. So if you long press on the background, Jason, long press on the screen. Okay. Right there, you can get wallpapers, widgets. You can add a page, so you can add screens, which is nice. But then if you go to the settings, that's where it really shows you the power of a Flick Launcher here. So what you're able to do, there is a pro version that unlocks a couple of different functionality, but it's nothing. It basically gives the home button a soft key. Yeah. That sort of thing. And being able to use the home button as something else. That's the only thing you're missing from the pro version. But in here, you can, under layout, there's a lot of things you can customize in terms of this. You can enable night mode. You can enable immersive mode, which takes away the status bar and nav bar, which is kind of neat. You can also change the size of the grid and the colors. It's just completely customizable. If you back out of there and go into the settings, you can customize the AppDraw itself. You can change how it looks, the size of it. Basically, you can allow predicted apps or not predicted apps. So it's really a lot of granular control on a very clean material-based, kind of launcher experience. You can customize the search bar. You can customize the dock. You can add folders. But then also it's got, if you back up, it's got a bunch of gestures as well. So what you can do is you can tap on gestures and you can customize. You can double tap the screen to put the phone to sleep. You can do a tap gesture or swipes up and down with one finger and two finger to launch different apps. So you can just have, you know, you tap the phone twice and have that launch your Messenger app or whatever you want to use. So it's just nice. It was a neat little launcher by one guy as a developer. It reminds me a lot of how, you know, like, you know, Nova Launcher started. It's just, you know, kind of one person making the launcher that they want to use, which I think is pretty cool. So I'm using the free version of Flick Launcher. There, like I said, there is a paid version. It's like $1.99, and helps support the developer that way. But yeah, if you want a different view for your phone and you want a little more control over it, Flick Launcher, lightweight, not too many bells and whistles, which I think sometimes a lot of launchers get overloaded with bells and whistles. So there you go.
And we turned on circular icons, and my goodness, that's a wall of circular icons.
Oh,
just take it in. Just breathe it in.
Those circular getting twitchy. Icons.
Sorry about that. Excellent. That is Flick Launcher unreleased, or that's what it says on the Play Store page, but yep. That doesn't mean you can't get it. You can. Go to the Play Store and search for Flick Launcher, and you can find
it. That's it.
Awesome. All right, Phil, you alluded to this a little bit earlier. I have it installed on my S8 Plus. So I guess talk about it a little bit, and let's see if I can follow along with you here.
I don't see any badge. Oh, no, I did. Did I see a badge? Do you have any badges
Oh, right there,
showing?
The folder. Is that what you're talking
about?
There you go. That, yeah,
these little yes, that number.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, and if you open the folder up, you'll see the app that it belongs to. Those numbers mean nothing to me.
Yeah,
I don't care that I have, you know, 17 unread things on Twitter or 5 unread emails. Of course I have unread emails. Unless you tell me what it is and whether or not it's important, you are in the way. I'm not sure if you can tell, but I don't like these badges. Not a fan. Not a fan. So what this lets you do is disable that process. So the first thing you have to do is actually clear all the badges. And that's another, you know, if you long press the app, it'll give you the option to clear the badge.
You can do it that way, so, but let me get into the app. I know that I installed it, but
right,
it's not showing.
Right, so first you have to clear all the badges, because once you you're going to disable the badge provider in
packaged. So I installed it, but it's not an app to actually launch, right?
No, it's an app to launch.
Why am I not seeing it? That's
I don't know. Maybe you didn't actually install it.
All right, we'll talk, and I'll make sure that I get it.
So
talk.
Package Disabler Pro, so you're going to go through this list, and I can hold it up here if that helps at all, but it doesn't really. Oh, there you go. So, yeah, you've got this list of packages, and God knows what happens if you just start clicking around, so I haven't done that yet. But you're going to go down to Badge Provider? Where is it? Yes, Badge Provider, and you just hit the button on that, and it stops those badges from working. And that also means if you still have badges on your home screen, you won't be able to get rid of them. Now, another way to just get rid of all this would be to use a launcher. But if you really like Samsung's launcher, and there's a lot about it to like for as much complaining as I did earlier, and all you want to do is get rid of these badges, this will take care of it. Works great. It's like $1.50, I think.
And I just realized, dang it, I'm sorry I couldn't show it off myself because I have just started setting up this S8. I do not have an admin password. Or something key that I need to enter in and set up for Knox security, in order to tap into that. But we have video and screens, and you showed yours, so that's a good way to do it too. Awesome. The badges, I guess they don't bug me that much. I guess I just don't look at them. But then I know what you mean. Like, it's like visual clutter, and anytime I do notice them, then it bugs me that I feel like I need to jump in them and clear. Like go into the actual app and take care of it. But
exactly.
Yeah, we're always getting new emails, new tweets.
The badges and the and notifications too. I think I tweeted the other day that notifications are the work of the devil. It's just like it's getting to the point now where I just recently set up a new laptop and I went in at the OS level. I'm like, notifications off. Like, I don't want any little thing in the upper right hand corner telling me someone mentioned me in Slack or anything like that. Let me get my work done. Let me focus. So,
yeah.
They're just attention stealers.
We don't need no stinking badges.
None.
No, says Phil. Package Disabler Pro is what you're looking for if you want to get rid of those badges on your phone, on your Samsung phone. All right. Mine is. I've had this kind of like on the back burner for a while. I like the design of it. It's called TapLog. And really, it's just a way to kind of keep track of individual kind of tallies of things. So in this example, there's weight. I've got this set up if I was like trying to track my weight over time, let's say, I could tap that and it's programmed and I could put in whatever my weight is. In this case, I'm 6,255 pounds, log it, and then that would be added to my tap log for that particular thing. And over time, it just makes it very easy to jump right in and do that. Say there was a rabbit sighting. I was somewhere and I saw a rabbit and I want to make sure that later I know where that rabbit was. I tap this. It's set to jump right into the map and indicate on a map where I happen to be when I saw that rabbit. I can hit OK. It's logged. And there you can see rabbit sighting and there's the coordinates for it, whatever it happens to be. Obviously, you don't need to use this to track your weight or rabbit sightings. Who would ever want to track rabbit sightings after all? But you can use it to create your own things. So you can set up a button. You can customize that button, set an icon on it, whatever you want, and really kind of get in there and kind of play with the formulas as far as how this can be used in a quick way when you're doing something that you want to be tracking, let's say. I'm going to discard that, though, for now. And then, of course, if you want to keep everything all organized on your screen so it's obvious where things are going, if you have similar things that you're tracking, let's say, or whatever, you can throw them into a folder and keep things nice and neat. Text note, for example, I could go ahead and plug in a note that says Hoda Fluff Fluff, and I'll log it, and that'll be added to the ongoing kind of log of things that I'm tracking. It's called TapLog. It's pretty straightforward, pretty easy. Has a nice, simple design to it, following in some ways the material design formula, spec, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, it's kind of cool. It also has some, I think you can add some widgets as well with this. Let's go and take a look at that real quick. I jump into my widgets. Scroll, man, I've got a lot of widget options apparently. And you can see tap log. You can track individual things and just basically set up a whole screen on your home screen, like a chart, for example, weight over time. You could see an always updating chart on your home screen via the widget that kind of shows your progress over time. Increment, counter, all these widgets so that you can set it on your home screen and keep track of it there if you don't want to have to always dive in to the app itself. There it is. It's called TapLog. Pretty low install, 5 to 10,000. So it's a pretty low install app, but kind of cool. If you're looking to keep track of things and do it easily, that's what TapLog is all about. All right. We have, let's see here. I've created the bit.ly link. It's bit.ly/AAAPoll315. bit.ly/AAAPoll315. 315 to place your vote. Flick Launcher, Package Disabler Pro, and Tap Log. Place your vote. Now to check in next week.
The important question, which one will Brian vote for? Mm-hmm.
This is always the question. It's very important. Oh.
Oh, wow. Oh. Wow, Brian, I'm honored.
Brian did indeed pick Ron's Flick Launcher.
Wow.
This time around. Don't feel bad, Phil. Brian doesn't have the S8, so
yeah. I'm a fickle beast. So, but yeah, it's a good app, Ron. I liked it.
Oh, thanks, Brian. I appreciate it.
I think maybe because Brian was on Ron's show not too long ago, he's like, that's why he's doing it.
Well, if you tune into a damn fine podcast and download the episode that I was on, I was bribed. You just won't know until you listen to it.
Oh, that's true.
It's not out yet. Yeah. Gotta wait.
Well, we'll have to wait for that. All right, we'll get to that plug in a second. But Phil Nickinson, I'm super stoked that we could get you back on and that I could be here for it because I love doing this show with you. And you brought the grumpiness and I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Nice to know I haven't lost that.
Yes, being a modern dad has not softened your grumpitude. No. Tell everyone kind of what you want them to know about Modern Dad or anything else you're working on. If you have a show kind of that you want to tease, go for it.
Yeah, no, we're doing a video or two a week, generally at least two.
Wow.
Is there a motorcycle in your office?
That was a truck, believe it or not.
Oh.
YouTube.com/moderndad. is the easiest and best way. And please subscribe.
Yeah.
Awesome when you do that. And actually, if you go to moderndad.com, we just started doing some contests. We're giving away a Huawei P10 for the first phone, which is kind of awesome.
Nice.
I'm trying to decide, and maybe I'll let you guys decide for me. Should I give away my Nintendo Classic?
Oh,
no.
Ooh. I don't know. Or no. You could give it away and just build yourself a Pi.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
I could, yeah. It's pretty awesome. So yeah, we're finally giving stuff away, which is great. Love doing that. So more videos, more contests, just having a good time doing this. It's great.
Fantastic.
Please subscribe.
Well, you're doing awesome, awesome stuff at Modern Dad, and I'm sure it's nice to kind of break it up and not be locked into the phones and tablets world and be able to spread out. It certainly gives you a lot more content options to work for.
So. Yeah, so it's so much cool stuff out there I get to try.
Cool. And your home's getting much smarter, too.
Yes.
That's the byproduct. thank you, Phil. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Ron, it's always a pleasure to have you too, Ron.
It's always great to be here. It's always the highlight of my week. One of the many highlights of my week. Some additional highlights. Well, first off, you can follow me at RonXO on Twitter and on Instagram and all the fun stuff. You guys know where to find me. But then also go check out iFanboy, where I'm talking about comic books every week. My other highlight of my week. And actually next week we'll be talking about the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie. So that'll be fun. I need to figure out when I'm going to go see that. And then as the aforementioned Brian Burnett will be on my other podcast, A Damn Fine Podcast, which you can find at damnfinepodcast.com, with Tom Merritt, my co-host on that show. And Brian will be on May 1st. So next Monday. So listen, all about Android listeners, you need to go listen to that show. And then next Tuesday, we'll make fun of Brian about being on it. So that's a little homework for you. So go to damnfinepodcast.com, check it out there. Thank you, everybody. And a little tease, big surprise next week on the show. So you'll have to tune in to see what next week will bring. But big surprise. So there you go.
I'm excited.
Me too.
I don't know what you're talking about. We'll talk about it after the show. Actually, I think
we emailed earlier. Yeah, you know.
Thank you, Ron. Brian, tell us about you. What is your favorite thing to do in your – what is your hobby?
What is my hobby? I think posting videos and then having Jason be my my social media father and telling me don't go so fast.
Oh, my God. That's not you driving, is it?
Yes.
Why were you weaving like that?
Having fun. It felt like I was riding on the moon of Endor. That's what I do on my day off.
Are you holding the camera or is it mounted to you?
I'm holding it with both hands.
No, you're not.
I'm kidding. No, I have a GoPro attached to the top of my helmet. So, but she's
that is horrifying. Like motorcycles are the one of the things that I am actually scared of, and this is not helping me.
That was horrifying. What about dog mask with my dog?
That doesn't bother me. Oh, okay. You see, that doesn't bother
normal.
Me.
This is normal. Yeah, this is everyday life right here. It's the motorcycle that's uncommon.
Those are the things I do on my off time. But when I'm not, riding motorcycles or wearing a mask with my corgi, I do a how-to show with Padre. And it's funny you mentioned the Nintendo Classic because we will be doing the 3D printed case with a Raspberry Pi and wireless SNES controllers. And you'll have as many ROMs as you want on a Raspberry Pi to play as an emulation station. So that'll be coming up in a few weeks. And more recently, I did a Raspberry Pi Alexa. I think that came out on Monday. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out at twit.tv/KH.
Hey, Brian, let me ask you something about that. So if I built a Raspberry Pi NES and you said all the ROMs I could fit on, is that legal?
Silence. if you own the game and you find those ROMs somewhere, quotations, I'm doing a little quotations with my fingers, then you're welcome to use it. Just don't advertise.
What's the statute of limitations on own the game? Because I owned Nintendo games in 1988.
It's a gray area, Ron. It's definitely a gray area. But
Ron, you totally have an extra basement room that is nothing but stacks of every single video game made for all consoles, right?
The sad truth is that while not every game for all consoles, it's dang close.
All right, well, there you go.
Boxes of games from the years. But so
you're in a better state than many, then, I would imagine. cool stuff, Brian. And please be careful when you're riding that motorcycle, please. You can find me at jasonhowell.com or yellowgoldmusic.com, whichever one sticks in your brain, just go there. And find me on Twitter. I'm at Jason Howell there. But that is it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. We haven't gotten any in a while. Or video mail. You can email those, AAA@twit.tv, as well as your standard email. But video mail is really cool, so do it, and we'll probably put it on the show. Twitter, we are at Android Show. We have a subreddit at twitaaa.reddit.com. Show notes and past episodes always found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Pocket Casts, all over where podcasts are found. And you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Yeah.